Melbourne History Talks. The History of Spiritualism in Victoria, a talk by Professor Andrew Singleton of Deakin University on the 23rd of May 2024 at the City of Melbourne Libraries. Thanks so much. I also respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners on the land in which we're meeting tonight, the Wurundjeri Woi Wurrung and Bun Wurrung and Boon Wurrung peoples of the Kulin Nation. And I pay my respects to their elders past and present, and recognise their continuous connection to this land for more than 2,000 generations. So I am Andrew Singleton. I'm Professor of Sociology and Social Research at Deakin University. I'm a social researcher. I study religious change, and also I study new religious movements, which is one of the reasons I'm interested in spiritualism. I've recently completed a major research project on spiritualism in Australia with my colleague Professor Matt Tomlinson from the Australian National University. We've published several papers. If you're interested, you can just email me and I'm happy to send them to you. And we've got a forthcoming book called Let the Dead Speak, Spiritualism in Australia, which is due out in early 2025 with Manchester University Press. And so some of what I'm talking about tonight is based on that book, and a lot of it comes from my joint research with Matt. I'm also at Deakin University, named after Alfred Deakin. And, of course, Alfred Deakin was the second president of the Victorian Association of Progressive Spiritualists, a group that eventually became the Victorian Spiritualist Union. And I know that there's some people from the VSU here tonight, including President Lorraine, so welcome to VSU and to everyone else, welcome. I'm really glad that you've come to listen to me talk tonight. My talk is in three acts, Victorian Spiritualism in three acts. Act one, Gold, Ideas and Progress, in which I'll cover the 19th century period. Second, A Beacon in Turbulent Times, where I talk about spiritualism in the interwar years. And fourthly, Revival and Renewal, 1970s to the present. On to Act One, Gold, Ideas and Progress in the late 19th century. Let's begin with a seance. It's August 1853. In Geelong, a curious group gathers in a dimly lit drawing room. They've been reading reports in the Argus newspaper about strange spiritual phenomenon sweeping through America. People are said to be communicating with the dead. And this group here in Geelong is eager to see if they too can contact the spirit world. With the curtains drawn and the gas lamps dimmed, they begin their experiment. One believer, who's confident in the reality of these spiritual claims, should be on silent, but it's not. Maybe it's the spirits or so. One believer, confident in the reality of the spiritual claims, suggests they place their hands on the table and summon a spirit. They call and they wait. And they call again and they wait. After the 20th call, the room falls silent as three distinct raps echo in response to their call. Astonished, they start asking the spirit questions and more raps follow. The table even lifts and then lowers itself. The skeptics in the room are baffled. Two men, who are determined to uncover the truth, decide to try this same experiment at home. Once again, resting their hands on the table, they hear the raps and see the table move. One man, in silent thought, asks a question and receives a precise response through the gentle rocking of the table. So despite their efforts to debunk it, they remain puzzled. Spiritualism has arrived in Australia, and believers and skeptics want to know more. What do the dead have to say? So I want to begin by just talking about what spiritualism is. So I'm just going to offer what I think it is. There's not necessarily universal disagreement, so the spiritualists in the room take umbrage with me afterwards, not right now during the talk. So spiritualism is a social movement, it's a religion, and it's a philosophy. And its core belief is very simple. Both then and now, spiritualists believe that life after death is an empirical fact, that the dead retain their personalities after they've passed over to the other side, and they retain their appearance in the afterlife, and that the living can readily communicate with those who have passed over, and those who can communicate with the dead are known as mediums. Spiritualism began in 1848 in Hydesville, New York, which is near Rochester. It's in upstate New York, and that's actually a photograph of where it began, and it began with the Fox sisters. And that's actually me staring through the window at the Hydesville Memorial Park. The Fox sisters, these were young women, and they claimed to hear knocking sounds in the walls of their cottage. They said it was the spirit of a dead peddler. And they began developing a code to communicate with this spirit. And it was a sensation, and people came from all around to see them and hear them communicate with the spirit. They soon started performing seances on the stage in nearby Rochester, and their success sparked a widespread interest and also controversy, leading many others to adapt and adopt these practices. And eventually, soon, a social movement was born that they called modern spiritualism. And it didn't take long for the practice of communicating with the dead to become formalised. So talking with the dead takes place two ways, via mental and physical mediumship. And mediums work in different settings, including parlour seances, on stage, at spiritualist churches, and private settings. Mental mediumship involves a medium receiving messages from spirit through thoughts, impressions, or images, which are then communicated to the living, and that person, called the sitter, then responds to the medium, yes or no, based on the information that the medium is providing them. And it's now the main way in which spiritualists communicate with the dead. So if you go to a typical spiritualist church, what you'll see is mental mediumship. Physical mediumship is what most people think of when they think of spiritualism, particularly 19th century spiritualism. So here's three examples of how physical mediumship takes place. The first is the talking board, sometimes known as a Ouija board, which allows participants to spell out messages from spirits by moving a planchette across a marked surface, and so it will spell out words or letters. There's also the spirit trumpet, which is a canonical device which is used to amplify the whispers of spirits during seances. The seance itself. In a typical parlour seance, a medium will sit in a cabinet to enhance the spirit communication. The medium might produce ectoplasm that seems to flow from their mouths. Tables might lift and move. Objects might levitate. And ghostly apparitions could appear, all contributing to that kind of distinctive 19th century sort of spiritualist motif. The physical seance itself was partially inspired by stage magic, and a lot of mediums use techniques like those employed by stage magicians in order to create their spectacle. Unfortunately, many physical mediums were exposed as frauds, so consequently, this branch of spiritualism has largely faded away, and so what most spiritualists do now is mental mediumship. Though, as I'll describe at the end of this talk, there is some physical mediumship still taking place in Melbourne today. Now I want to talk about popular mediumship in Melbourne. So following the Fox sisters, spiritualism quickly gained widespread popularity. By the late 19th century, this fascination with talking to the spirits had given rise to a professional class of stage performing mediums, and they became very popular in Europe and North America. These stage mediums, they blurred the lines between spiritual communication, stage magic, and popular entertainment. Melbourne, which was one of the most cosmopolitan and wealthiest cities in the world, we were not going to be left behind. And Ballarat itself was also not going to be left behind, rich in gold. And so we received many of these international performers coming to our shores. This is the Davenport brothers, Ira and William, and they were renowned mediums, and they would neither confirm nor deny the assistance of spirits in their stage shows. In 1876, they toured Australia and they performed two seances over two nights at the Melbourne Town Hall. Their performances drew huge crowds. They packed out the Melbourne Town Hall, and some of Melbourne's most important people turned out to see them. The audience, they witnessed remarkable incidents in the dark seance, including instruments playing by themselves as the brothers were bound and gagged inside the cabinet. In February 1878, Monsieur Houdin, who's described as the wizard of the world, he performed playful knowing magic at Sir George's Hall in Melbourne, one of Melbourne's many theatres. His show featured a dark seance, a levitation feat, and automatic writing, and it left the audience amazed. Others, of course, took spiritualism far more seriously, and there were numerous public lectures on the topic. The Victorian Association of Progressive Spiritualists, which by this stage was now named the Victorian Association of Spiritualists, hosted weekly lectures in some of the large theatres in Melbourne, and they drew large crowds. It also left them on the financial precipice a number of times. Emma Harding Britton, a British-born spiritualist and one of spiritualism's most famous apologists, toured Australia from 1878 to 1879. She captivated audiences with her wonderful oratory, and she often drew crowds of up to 2,000 people to hear her speak. This is a photograph of her with a spirit figure behind her, and it was taken by the famous New York spirit photographer William Mumler, and I encourage you to read about him. It's a very interesting character. So while there was stage magic and all of those kinds of things, a lot of people took the movement very seriously. Towards the end of the 1860s, in both Australia and elsewhere, proponents of spiritualism decided to start forming associations. These groups would provide a context for scientific investigation, lectures, seances, debates, and most importantly, the development of mediumship skills, mental mediumship. The world's oldest continuously running association of spiritualists is indeed the Victorian Spiritualist Union. It began, as I said, as the Victorian Association of Progressive Spiritualists, and in 1870 it counted amongst its first members future Prime Minister of Australia, Alfred Deakin. They were not the only group of spiritualists in Victoria. By 1871, there were also groups of progressive spiritualists in Stawell and Bendigo. The Victorian Association of Progressive Spiritualists became the Victorian Association of Spiritualists in 1878 and became the VSU in 1931. These associations began offering a weekly religious service. Each service would feature an esoteric lecture, some singing, and some demonstrations of mediumship. And this structure solidified spiritualism's transition from being a social movement to what we might understand as being a more formal religion. Spiritualists developed what they call the seven principles, which is the kind of core set of spiritual tenets that they subscribe to. Now, spiritualists are very undogmatic religion, so not every spiritualist will accept these, but these are kind of the guiding principles. And they were given to Emma Harding Britton through some mediumship. And this is a photograph of the seven principles on display at the Brisbane Spiritual Church. But they're often displayed in a number of spiritualist churches, and if not displayed, they're discussed and recited at a typical spiritualist service. One of the founders of the Victorian Association of Progressive Spiritualists was William Terry. And in 1870, just before the founding of that organisation, he launched a magazine called The Harbinger of Light. It was a spiritualist periodical. It aimed to spread information about spiritualism, to educate and connect believers, and to legitimise the movement and provide a forum for where people could describe their personal experiences. And it lasted all the way through until 1954. And you can still read copies of it online, and the State Library holds an excellent collection of the Harbinger. They also needed places to worship. So most spiritualist congregations met in hired halls, but they had ambitions to buy property. Victoria's very first dedicated spiritualist church building was owned by the Stawell Progressive Spiritualists in Western Victoria, and it opened its doors in late 1872. Unfortunately, they sold the building just 4 years later to the Methodists. But it's still there now I think it's a Church of Christ, but that's the building. Spiritualism in the 19th century was popular for a number of social reasons. It was very much aligned with progressive thought, such as women's liberation and also the abolition of slavery in the United States. It was fundamentally about women's empowerment, and some of the most important mediums of the age were women. And there's also just a general fascination with communicating with the dead. I think advances in technology played a role, and it was an era in the 19th century that was ripe for new ideas and new experiences. Christianity, quite frankly, to the people in the 19th century was old hat. Spiritual communication could offer new ways of thinking in a rapidly changing age, but also an age still very much haunted by the premature loss of life. By the end of the century in Melbourne and Victoria, spiritualism had become a distinct and growing religious movement. And the state of Victoria was the leading light for Australian spiritualism. More than half of the country's spiritualists lived here in Victoria. And there's all sorts of other kinds of evidence of its vitality at the turn of the century. This is a page from a magazine called The Messenger. It was founded in 1896 by Mrs. Knight McClellan, who was a medium in Fitzroy, and it provided information about various spiritualist associations and churches. This is a copy from 1908, and you can see advertisements there for the Victorian Association of Spiritualists, the Paran Spiritualist Church. It's also got the Spiritualist Association of Victoria, the Melbourne Progressive Spiritual Lyceum, the Richmond Spiritualist Church, and so on. It's also got advertisements for occult products and private readings. Another example of the vitality of this time is another spiritualist periodical called Tolerance Magazine. This was launched in 1915, and it served as the official organ of the Spiritualistic Council of Victoria, which later became the Victorian Council of Spiritualistic Churches. This was a rival organisation to the Victorian Association of Spiritualists. Only one of those organisations still persists, so kudos to the VSU. The Victorian Council of Spiritualistic Churches folded in the 1930s. Of course, as I said earlier, buying property was a key objective. If you had a church building, it gave you a focus for your community and the potential for longevity. The Brunswick Progressive Spiritual Lyceum was founded in the early 1900s, and in 1910, because of some community donations, they were able to purchase this building. And that church community still runs in the present day, and they still worship from that building. The VSU acquired property over time, but got their first dedicated spiritualist hall in 1931. In 1913, the spiritualist pioneer William Terry, the founder of the Harbinger of Light, he passed over. For his memorial service, 14 churches and societies around Melbourne participated, in addition to representatives from spiritualist churches in New South Wales and New Zealand. The combined Spiritualistic Churches and Societies choir sang special anthems at the event in order to honour his memory. Things were looking bright for spiritualism, but there were dark clouds on the horizon. There was the war, depression, and public trouble for Victoria's spiritualists. On to Act Two, Spiritualism, a beacon in turbulent times. In August 1920, someone at Victoria Police decided to commence a sting operation targeting spiritualists, specifically female mediums who were providing readings for a fee. The police planned to charge them under the Vagrancy Act for what was described as telling fortunes. Their plan was cunning and simple. Writing under the nom de plume Miss Merle Rowe, a police officer would solicit a reading. This letter reads, "Dear Mrs. Borden," and Mrs. Borden was a medium at the Occult Church of Victoria, "I've heard of your wonderful gift, would like very much to hear what you could tell me. Unfortunately, I cannot get away for any length of time. Therefore, I would like you to let me know when it would suit you to grant me a special sitting, trusting you will favour me with an early reply. Yours, Miss Merle Rowe." Their list of intended targets was sourced from mediums and churches who were advertising the Argus newspaper that previous Saturday. This included mediums at the Paran Spiritualist Church, the Spiritual Science Church in the Eastern Arcade, and the Victorian Association of Spiritualists. Now, some of these were real spiritualist churches, while others were just fronts for women mediums who were offering paid readings. I am not sure what the outcome of this particular sting operation was, but between 1918 and 1940, many female mediums were charged and prosecuted. The immense loss of life in World War I led to a surge in spiritualism as grieving families sought comfort and connection with their lost loved ones. Obviously, this period saw an increased demand for mediums as people yearned for reassurance and communication from the afterlife. This is a photo of Eastern Arcade taken in 1922. The arcade was bustling with businesses, including costume hire shops, wig makers, phrenologists, fortune tellers, and alternative health practitioners. Nestled amidst these diverse services were things like the Spiritual Science Hall, where Mrs. Hughes Scott offered flower readings and telepathy, along with two shops, namely Mrs. Dooch, who was providing spiritual meetings, and Mrs. Knight, also providing spiritual meetings. Women like Mrs. Knight would offer a daily reading for a fee and then offer a message service on the weekend in which they would have passed around the collection plate. The clientele for such services were mainly women. And for the practitioners, for the mediums themselves, it represented income and independence. But it's also true that these women mediums were reviled, and they're often seen as preying on the grieving. To my mind, it was the independence that they had as income-earning women that was reviled, as opposed to their practices. Mrs. Knight herself was arrested shortly after this photograph was taken. She was charged and fined as part of a police raid. Here's another photograph of the Eastern Arcade, and just underneath where it says Eastern Arcade, you can see the sign Spiritual Science Hall, which is where Mrs. Hughes Scott was providing her services. Ostensibly, she had a spiritualist church, but my kind of reading of the archive is that it was mostly professional readings. So there's little doubt that the loss of life in World War I and the immense grief of the living drove spiritualism. Unlike other religions, spiritualism provided a means to directly communicate with the departed loved ones, offering a unique form of comfort and connection. But the dead themselves were also talking through the facility of mediumship. This slide features a letter that was published in Tolerance magazine on July 1st, 1916. It's a poignant message from a deceased soldier named Tom, dictated to his mother. "To my dear mother, I am not dead. You think of me as lying at Gallipoli, but I am not there. The part that lies there is no more than that old coat of mine that you gave away to a poor man. How can I make you understand? I am alive and working. I used to learn of heaven as a place of rest, but we are not resting here. There is so much work for you to do, but you would hardly believe it's possible that I could be so busy. You have no idea of the different kinds of work that must be done. Just before I forget, let me tell you that I saw Aunt Flo the other day. I knew her at once. She is just like the picture that hangs over the mantelpiece," and so on. There's some very distinctive themes about the spiritualist afterlife. It's a place of personal growth and development, in which we're reunited with loved ones. And you can see there's no kind of cosmic judgment. It's a place of progress and peace. In the years after World War I, spiritualism was also boosted by public figures endorsing the movement. There was Sir Oliver Lodge, a renowned physicist in England, but no one was more famous apologist for spiritualism than Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. After the war claimed his own son, Doyle turned to spiritualism for solace, and he penned a number of books on the topic, and he toured extensively. He came to Australia in 1920 and 1921 to promote the cause. His stops included visits in Adelaide, Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, Perth, Bendigo and Geelong. By his own tally, he spoke to more than 50,000 people across this tour. And this is a photograph of him on the Melbourne Town Hall on the 12th of November 1920. And they were here to hear him specifically lecture on spiritualism. He wasn't talking about his professional writing. Of course, he had a famous spat with the magician Harry Houdini about the veracity of spiritualism. This was widely covered in the newspapers, including the spiritualist newspapers, the daily newspapers here in Victoria. Boosted by this interest in spiritualism across the state, and indeed the whole country, but no more so than Victoria, the number of message services and churches grew significantly in the interwar period. In the early 1920s in Melbourne, there was about 20 different spiritualist churches and services, ranging from simple offerings from women like Mrs. Ward and Mrs. Cohen to churches like the Brunswick Progressive Spiritual Lyceum and the Victorian Association of Spiritualists in downtown Melbourne. Anyone could run a church service, and this is indeed what happened. If you could hire a hall and you had some capabilities as a medium, there was nothing stopping you from running a service. By July 1933, shortly after the Wall Street crash and in the throes of the Great Depression, there was more than 42 different spiritualist churches in Melbourne. This map I created by looking at the location of spiritualist churches in the Age newspaper in November 1938, and I got a cartographer at the Australian National University to draw up the map. You can see that there's a very large and surprising number of spiritualist services. There were 7 message services in the Central Business District alone, and there were others nearby in Carlton and Richmond. Clusters of churches were found in the northern suburbs, such as Brunswick, Moonee Ponds, Northcote and Preston. The southeastern suburbs, such as St Kilda, Glen Huntly and Peran. In the eastern suburbs, there were churches in Camberwell and Malvern, and the western suburbs had churches in Ascot Vale and Footscray. Churches sprung up and disappeared all the time. So you can compare 5 years before that and see a different pattern of churches. Some were well established, but others were just fleeting. The location of these churches is suggestive of the demographic composition of spiritualism. Spiritualists, of course, were more likely to be women, and women were far less likely to drive the few cars that were around. So it mattered that churches were near major public transport routes, because that was the way that the congregants could get to their churches. Along with the growth and publicity came a measure of respectability at times. The Malvern Spiritual Church celebrated its 8th anniversary in 1929, and speeches were delivered by no less than the Premier of Victoria at the time, Sir William McPherson, and the Mayor of Malvern, Councillor Hatton. At the same time, there were enduring battles for legitimacy. There was concerns about their credibility, and spiritualists themselves were also eager to gain the right to marry people. So they repeatedly appealed to the government for recognition as an official religion. Typically, the Australian government doesn't recognise a religion as being official religion except for the purposes of the Marriage Act, so they're allowed to preside over marriages. In 1914, the members of the Brunswick Spiritualistic Church, the Brunswick Progressive Spiritual Lyceum, which is still operating today, they submitted a petition to the Victorian Parliament, and they sought to have their church recognised as a denomination and a religious body to fulfil all related duties. The petition drew the backing of 40 church members, and you can even see their addresses in places like Barclay Street in Brunswick. The Victorian Spiritualist Union and also the Victorian Association of Spiritualistic Churches also petitioned the government for this recognition. But they didn't actually receive any recognition to preside over marriages until the 1980s. So it was a very long campaign, but they can now do so. So to summarise the interwar period, the Great War invigorated spiritualism in Australia, though it never quite had the widespread acceptance or official recognition that its followers hoped for. Unfortunately, things took a turn for the worse after World War II, and in the following 20 years, there was a precipitous decline in the number of spiritualist churches in Victoria. By 1976, only 4 of Melbourne's pre-war spiritualist churches remained, and the total number of message services and churches had dropped steadily since the 1940s. But a new chapter was about to begin. On to Act 3, Revival and Renewal, 1970s to the present day. Thanks to AI for generating these pictures. I typed, show me a picture of teenagers in the 1970s with a Ouija board at a seance, and boom, there you go. In 1980, the Victorian Spiritualist Union, the VSU, as I'll now refer to them, staged two notable events. First, they successfully hosted the renowned British medium, spirit artist and author Coral Polge. Polge's visit to Australia included two platform shows at the Kew Civic Centre, which is a large venue at Melbourne's affluent inner eastern suburbs. Was anyone at the Coral Polge show, any of the VSU members? No? Ah, yeah. But you never went. Oh.
Early days.
But you were there. Oh. Excellent. I'd love to hear more about that. Apparently the shows were not sellouts, according to the VSU Minutes, but I'm happy to be corrected if there was a larger audience. In addition to Coral Polge coming out, the VSU organised what was called the Psychic Orientation Conference at La Trobe University. And this attracted more than 450 attendees. This is 1980. The aim of the conference was to foster a dialogue on paranormal phenomena between psychics, academics and the public. The event featured presentations from 26 scholars and spiritualists, including the VSU president, George Eldred, and the former federal treasurer, Dr. Jim Cairns. As the 1970s ended, the VSU was enjoying record membership, financial stability, and had recently planted three suburban churches. In the 1970s, spiritualism more generally experienced a revival as a new generation, disillusioned with mainstream Christianity, sought deeper meanings and fresher experiences. Influenced by the counterculture of hippies, psychedelics and flower power, there was a widespread spiritual awakening, and spiritualism directly benefited from this. And this trend is reflected in the record membership numbers of the Victorian Spiritualist Union, which swelled as high as 1,500 people in 1978. And just as VSU membership grew, new congregations formed across Melbourne to meet this demand for spirit communication. In the 1970s, new congregations appeared in the following suburbs: Burwood, Faulkner, Huesdale, Lilydale, Malvern, Clayton, Mornington, Ringwood, Seaford, Upway and Williamstown. The Huesdale Church in that list was founded in 1976 and by 1978 had 100 members. Some of these were independent congregations, but the VSU became an umbrella organisation, serving as a mother to nine branch churches, and it remains an umbrella organisation to the present day, in addition to offering services at Ringwood and North Melbourne. You can tell by that list of churches that I just read out that the demand for spiritualism had changed demographically. It had gone from a movement clustered around the inner city to a movement of the outer suburbs, which is now, to this present day, where the bulk of interest in spiritualism lies. This is a map of spiritualist churches in 2018. And in order to highlight the shift from the city centre, you can see that the boundary of the map in 1938 there. So it's moved outwards. A lot of these churches opened in the 1970s or even afterwards. This outward movement mirrors the large-scale suburban growth in the latter half of the 20th century. And it's through this expansion and reorganisation that the spiritualist movement overcame its post-war stasis. I should say about four of these churches are no longer operating, but others have since opened. So Faulkner is closed, Huesdale is closed, Phoenix is closed. I think Church of Seven Principles is closed, but it's closed, yeah. But many others are growing strong, and the One Light Federation in Melton only opened in 2016 or 2017. To conclude, spiritualism in the present. After 150 years, spiritualism is now an established religious and spiritual movement here in Victoria. The VSU is now based in North Melbourne. They hold weekly services in their specially designed chapel, which is inside that building. And the walls adorned with incredible spirit art by the 19th century spirit art painter Georgiana Horton, who was a pioneering British medium and a spirit artist from that time. And in fact, her artworks are now displayed all over the world, including at the Pompidou in Paris. The VSU hosts regular message services on a Sunday. They have weekly readings and special events like psychic high teas. Churches in Williamstown, Brunswick and Ringwood, they all own their own buildings. And services also take place in regional areas such as Bendigo, the Latrobe Valley and Shepparton. This photograph is a photograph of a spiritualist church that opened in Ballarat in 2017 and lasted through to 2019. So sometimes churches don't last that long for a whole lot of reasons. However, as one closes, another one often opens up, and a new church started in Gippsland just this year. Those who are interested in physical mediumship still gather together, including at events like mediums, such as this one with the American physical medium Michael Shane. This photograph shows him at the end of a trumpet seance in upstate New York in 2019, but he also visited Australia a few months before this photograph was taken. Finally, there's public displays of mediumship, including at the Mind Body Spirit Festival. And there's one coming up, a Mind Body Spirit Festival, in the next couple of weeks, and you can see mediums doing demonstrations there. Shows by mediums in pubs and clubs often attract crowds of several hundred people. So to conclude, my talk has traced the remarkable history of spiritualism in Victoria. From its intriguing beginnings in the 19th century, we've seen how this movement's evolved. It had a revival in the 1970s, driven by a new generation's quest for deeper spiritual meaning, and this revitalised the movement. Today, spiritualism has firmly established its place in Victoria. This small, passionate movement, driven by the spiritually curious, has not only survived but flourished and has an enduring place in Victoria's spiritual landscape. Thank you.